It's KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Steve Scherer. This is Weekday. Steve Earle was raised in Texas, lived in Tennessee. Now he's living in Greenwich Village on the same block Bob Dylan made famous on the cover of his album Freewheeling. And between that simple description, there's a lot of stories, songs, and living to talk about. Today, Steve Earle joins us in our studios to play some music, take your calls. His new album is Washington Square Serenade. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be here.
Also in the studios with us is Allison Moore, accompanying Steve Earle in more ways than one, right?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for being here.
Every way you can.
Here, let's start with a song and then we'll talk.
Okay. City and won't be bad no more. Won't be bad no more. Bars won't see me around. Goodbye, Guitar Town. Ghosts out on the highway, voices on the wind, telling me we may never pass this way again. Voices on the highway, angels beckoning like a long lost friend. Fare thee well, I'm bound to roam. This ain't never been my home. Strange in my mirror, lines around my eyes, string around my finger, but I don't remember why. Don't remember why, boys, don't remember how. Goodbye, Guitar Town. Redhead by my side, cross the mighty Hudson River to the New York City side. Redhead by my side, boy, sweetest thing I found. And goodbye, Guitar Town.
Steve Earle, from your first song from a new CD, right?
Yeah, it was actually the second song I wrote, but it was sort of designed. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm trying to adjust to this idea that if I want to keep making records, I may have to stop thinking in terms of albums anymore. And I mean, I finally tested positive for Pro Tools on this record and stopped recording on tape because there isn't any more tape at the moment and probably extinct. And I just, but I've always written a song that was sort of designed to be the opening, you know, song, sometimes I write them like bookends. Sometimes I write the first song and the last song and then figure out what goes in the middle.
You were a folk singer from day one?
Yeah. I mean, I started it up. The first place I ever played for people was a place called the Gatehouse in San Antonio. And I played a lot of, believe it or not, there were coffee houses within service clubs during the Vietnam War. And it was like, that's when I started playing. And it was, these places didn't serve liquor. And I was only 14 when I started wanting to go out and play. So I couldn't play bars. And so I started out in coffee houses.
Were you doing protest songs when you were back then?
Sure. I mean, I've gotten a lot of trouble for singing Feel Like I'm Fixing to Die Rag on a flatbed trailer in front of the Alamo at a Vietnam Veterans Against the War rally. My father was an air traffic controller and worked for the government. And, you know, they came and got me out of school.
Steve Earle has received a total of 11 nominations for the Grammy Awards. 2004, he was given a Lifetime Achievement Award for songwriting by the BBC. In 2005, a Grammy Award for folk album, The Revolution Starts Now.
I can't go around and say I'm the Susan Lucci of rock and roll.
Anymore. Yeah, you won.
I finally won one.
You know, the other thing about that record is it comes out, people were saying, where are the protest songs? Where are the people protesting this war? I think even Neil Young said something about, you know, nobody's done an album yet, so I have to. But
right.
You were doing some.
Yeah, I know. The point is that we did do a really good job of censoring ourselves this time around.
We Americans?
Yeah, we allowed... I mean, it's funny. People were paying attention to me after I wrote John Walker's Blues that never paid attention to me before.
Because it was
a
song that looked at the point of view of John Walker Lynn, the American Taliban.
So all of a sudden, you know, the New York Post... I got a one-star review in the New York Post. That's my only review I've ever framed. I was so proud of that.
What was the reason?
I don't know what the reason was, but he, you know,
No. What was the reason that you wrote that song? You said
John Walker, because I have a 20-year-old son at the time. I had a son exactly the same age. He's 25 now, but I related to his parent, and no one else was going to write that song. I mean, it literally was. It was scapegoating. It was ugly. It was us at our ugliest. That fire was being stoked for the convenience of another agenda that had nothing to do with most people in the United States. And we're still living through the repercussions. And John Walker Lynn's still in prison. And no one's proven to anybody that I could tell. There's no public record anywhere that he's guilty of doing anything.
We don't have that song. Do you want to touch on? You want to play a little bit of that song?
Which song? Oh, John Walker's Blues.
Yeah,
sure. It's one of those things of it's always important to remember that I'm not always the character that's singing, but I do relate to the characters that I sing, that I give voice to in one way. I have to in order to be able to do it. So I'm just an American boy raised on MTV. Seen all them kids in the soda pop ads, and none of them look like me. So I started looking around for a light out of the dim. The first sign I heard that made sense was the word of Muhammad, peace be upon him. Ashadu, la ilaha illallah. There's no God but God. If my daddy could see me now, these chains around my feet, he don't understand. Sometimes a man got to fight for what he believes. I believe God is great. All praise due to him. And if I should die, I rise up to the sky like Jesus, please be upon him. I shall do la ilaha illallah. There's no God but God. Fight the jihad, and our hearts were pure and strong. When death filled the air, we all offered our prayers and prepared for our martyrdom. But Allah has some other plan, some secret not revealed. Now they're dragging me back with my head in the sack to the land of the infidel. Ashadu la ilaha illallah. Ashadu la ilaha illallah.
Steve Earle, John Walker on KOW. You know, I read in the Independent article that profiled you that you were telling Elvis Costello and another artist, I forget who.
It was actually Bobby Mueller, who is the president of the Vietnam Veterans Foundation, because we were out doing the landmine tour in Europe.
And they were a little unnerved by the fact that you're going to do that song.
I've known Elvis Costello for a long time, and Bobby Mueller I've known for a long time, and we've really kind of been in the trenches doing stuff that's really important to both of us. And Bobby really loves me and was really concerned that I might get hurt. And, you know, it was just like when that story leaked, we were a month from the record being out, and I was in Galway, and then the news broke in the States, the New York Post piece came out, and, you know, the headline was like, Twisted Ballad Glorifies Tally Rat, I think is what the headline was. And the guy that wrote it was a friend of that piece was a friend of a friend. And the funny thing about it was, I mean, he didn't care. He didn't have ideologically a dog in the fight at all. He was a stringer, and it got him. So he didn't write the headline. He wrote the story, and he knew how to slant it to get it printed. And, you know, it was funny. Then he turned around and through this friend of mine, you know, sent me a bunch of songs that he had written. And but my mother, it terrified my mother. My mother thought, because what's his name? The curmudgeon, you know, who used to be on the mornings and on CNN, and now he's on in the afternoons. The guy, you know, the grumpy old guy.
Not Lou Dobbs.
Not Lou Dobbs. That's a whole other story, and we've already been there. But anyway, he said, well, I hope he's got a good bodyguard. And that scared my mother to death, she called me.
What do you think about the change in America in the last 5 years in terms of the tone? I mean, this song, maybe the song, who knows, would still get people rubbed the wrong way. But overall, I mean, we can see it by the polls. We can see it by how people view the war.
Yeah, but that and a dime will get you a cup of coffee. I mean, I all credit to, you know, those of us that have been out here from the beginning. You know, all credit for all the work done, and for everyone that's managed. It takes a really big person to admit that you're wrong and to change. And nobody knows that better than me. It's why I'm still alive. But what we've done is, you know, more Democrats. There's not enough difference between Democrats and Republicans when it comes time to, you know, get elected. To change what's happening in this war. You know, we're in a position here. We can't fix this. I mean, that's my opinion. There'll be absolutely, we won't save one single life by staying. Nobody even talks about the Iraqi lives.
Well, let's talk about that a minute. Let me ask you about that, because when I do interviews with folks, Iraqis, for example, I talked to a guy just last week, and again, his argument was, and he's in Baghdad. He's a dentist.
Right.
His argument was, you know, America leaves, more people will get killed if America stays. Yes, Americans will be killed, but at this point, there's no good choice, but at least the Americans can stave off some additional deaths.
Well, he's a member of the group that is preserved, whose existence is preserved by the presence of Americans, which are not all of the people in Iraq. And as soon as... You know, the fact of the matter is, this is exactly the same thing as Tito in the former Yugoslavia. He was a bad guy, but as soon as he was gone, they took to killing each other just like they had before he was there. This is a strong man. And, you know, the idea, I'm sorry, but I refuse to accept the idea that the U.S. government and we as a people are fundamentally opposed to repressive regimes. We support repressive regimes whenever it suits our agenda. And we did support this particular regime that we just removed.
But what do we do about the people that are going to be killed when we leave? Anything?
I don't think there's anything we can do. I think we destroyed it. I think we are doomed to have that blood on our hands, too. It's just a matter of time. And do we want to wipe out an entire generation of a certain class of America's, you know, youth? I mean, it really is a class thing. It's not the reason that the people that are in power don't care, because it's not their kids. But if we continue this policy, it means staying in Iraq, staying the course like they're always talking about for years and years and years, and an entire generation of kids dying. I mean, kids coming home in body bags, which we still haven't seen the first body bag. At least during the Vietnam War, we saw the bodies. We saw the count, and it's not about them. It's about us, the same generation that stopped the Vietnam War, you know, bought Volvos and had kids named Dylan and Chelsea, and we didn't stay vigilant. It's about us. We have to participate in this democracy.
What does that mean? What does that mean for this election?
I don't know yet. I'm still, Dan Goldberg and I are still butting heads about this. I think I'm not a Bill Clinton fan, so I'm therefore not a Hillary Clinton fan. So I don't think she's any different than he is as far as what policy will take place. Always keep in mind, I'm a socialist, and I don't. More people were dumped from the welfare rolls in during the Clinton administration than all of the Reagan administration. Absolutely. I mean, you know, it'd be great if dumping people off of the welfare system just affected criminals who were trying to live off of the dole. It doesn't work that way. And, you know, I'm sorry, but it makes me angry when people go into the neighborhoods where I get a lot of amends to do in some very poor neighborhoods where I used to buy drugs, and I used to be part of, you know, another economy and another system that kept those people prisoners in their own homes because of this illegal commerce that went around. And most of the people in those neighborhoods weren't addicts. They were poor and they were prisoners in their own homes.
All right, we're gonna go out with another song from your new CD called Steve's Hammer. Thanks for listening to Weekday, KUW 94.9 Seattle. And let's listen to Steve's Hammer from Washington Square Serenade. Thanks a lot.
This is for Preet Seeger. One of these days I'm going to lay this hammer down. I won't have to drag this weight around. When there ain't no hunger and there ain't no pain, I won't have to swing this thing. One of these days I'm gonna lay this hammer down. One of these nights I'm gonna sing a different tune. All night long beneath the silvery moon.